through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. It's like they say, guys, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
They say that.
If you complain enough, you get your way. Every day at 2 o'clock, we do a Seahawks free agent profile. I think this has gone very, very well so far between the two of you guys. You do an excellent job breaking down all the guys on this team that the Seahawks should either keep or let walk. Today, we're dealing with Jermaine Ifedi and George Fant.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run in 2020.
Let's go!
Contract extension profile.
We're going to start off with Jermaine Ifedi. Former first-round pick in the 2016 draft out of Texas A&M, Jermaine Ifedi, as a right tackle and as a right guard, has started in every single game that he has been a part of in these 4 years. Jermaine Ifedi at 6'5", 311 pounds, age 25, turning 26 in June, is a player that has drawn a lot of criticism over the years, and rightfully so. Early part of his career, he did not play well, has made a lot of killer mistakes in terms of pre-snap penalties, in terms of holding calls, but really Ifedi has not gotten the proper credit of continuing to get better year after year. He has steadily improved, and it still hasn't been to the point where you say, man, you've got to re-sign this guy back, no-brainer. But Ifedi has improved over the years, and Pete Carroll in cut number one talking about this 2019 being his best.
He's playing good, solid football. This is the best he's played. You know, he's played the most consistent football, clearly, and and he's doing a good job. He's played tough, and he's been really steady and all that. There's always things that we're working on with all of our guys. He's got his things, but he's doing a good job.
Now, Jermaine Ifedi obviously has had his struggles, and this year, according to Pro Football Focus, Ifedi allowed 6 sacks, which tied for 17th in the league, which isn't a good mark, and he also had 13 penalties, which tied for 5th most. So for Jermaine Ifedi, this has not been a stellar year, but it has been an improvement over the last couple years. Now, with the market being what it is, the Seahawks going into this year, they declined his 5th-year option, which was a $10.35 million option. And so because they declined that and where the market is set, Jermaine Ifedi is set to make more than that. And I don't think the Seahawks are willing to pay that kind of top dollar for Jermaine Ifedi, a guy who's been widely inconsistent in his play, and I think it's time to move on. Which then leads us to our next player that we are going to talk about, which is George Fant. At 6'5", 322 pounds, at age 27, George Fant has had an up-and-down career. He was signed as an undrafted free agent back in 2016. I was in that locker room with him at the time. He was a basketball player trying to play offensive line, tight end, and just was really raw in the game, but continued to work hard, continued to be a great teammate and guy in that locker room to the point where the Seahawks gave him an opportunity to compete for the starting left tackle position, had a great offseason back in 2017, and then had that catastrophic ACL injury that kept him from those chances. The Seahawks later on go on and sign Dwayne Brown and trade for Dwayne Brown, limiting George Fant's ability to one day become a left tackle. Now, once the season ended in 2019, George Fant specifically said that he wanted to test the market and see if he could be a starting left tackle for a team in the NFL, and believes that he belongs in the NFL as a starting left tackle. And in cut number three, Dave Wyman saying that's actually kind of a smart thing to do for Fant.
We'll see what the market bears for him. You know, it's just always wise to go look at the market.
You know? I don't blame him at all to do. It'd be like doing that.
It'd be like selling your house right now in a private sale versus, you know, it's what one person thinks as opposed to putting it out on the market. You know, you might get bid up. that's kind of what's going on right now in real estate here. You know, for George, who knows how other people value him. But, you know, the fact that he said, well, I want to start and I want to play left tackle, I don't think that that's set in stone in his mind. I mean, I think he's just being, you know, he's being optimistic.
George Fant's being an advocate for himself in this situation. But the reality is, and the interesting part about George Fant is that he obviously created a unique role here in the Seahawks offense, playing tight end and being a swing tackle, meaning he was the backup left tackle, he was the backup right tackle. So he has the ability to play right tackle. And the question to me is, not whether you keep Jermaine Ifedi or not. I think you allow Jermaine Ifedi to walk, he tests the market, someone overpays for Ifedi. But whether you bring back George Fant as your starting right tackle of the future, he would be a cheaper contract. Maybe you only do a one-year sign to see if he can prove himself for that year. I believe it would probably be a one-year, $4 to $8 million type of contract, depending on what they end up getting and the interest that he gets in the free open market. But ultimately, George Fant is a guy that I think can play tackle at this in the NFL, and I think he would be a good stop back situation for the Seahawks here. And Walter Jones saying, legendary Walter Jones in cut number four, saying that the Seahawks definitely should be keeping Fant.
George Fant have done a lot here. I think the number one, for me personally, I think you got to bring George Fant back. You know, George Fant have done a lot here, have given up a lot too, but I think he had an opportunity to learn from a great guy in Dwayne Brown. So I think that's one guy I think you got to try to get back, but I'm fearful for him because I know once he go out there and test the market, you know what I'm saying, he got enough tape on film. They had him playing an extra blocker at tight end, and then those couple of games that Dwayne missed, he got an opportunity to go out there and get some stuff on film in tough situations. So I think he's a guy that I'm definitely thinking that the Seahawks are going to definitely try to bring back because he's a great commodity for the Seahawks.
So my suggestion, let Jermaine Ifedi walk. Potentially re-sign George Fant, or I'm going to take a right tackle early in the draft. So between Fant or that possibility of drafting someone early at that right tackle position, that's where I'm going to look towards if I'm the Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, it is nice to have Fant out there in the hybrid role he has right now, although I agree with you. I think if he's looking for a long-term deal and he's testing the market, it pays more to be a tackle. It pays more to be an offensive lineman. And it sounds like the role that he genuinely wants to play, whether he wants to play a left tackle somewhere or go into your right tackle role. It sounds silly, but it's something I hadn't really considered before. I think I just always thought that they loved Fant in that hybrid kind of eligible receiver role as a tackle slash tight end, not only because they could use him as an extra blocker and because they performed better with him as an extra blocker in there, especially their run game. But because that's just genuinely where they liked him, and they obviously liked what they had with Jermaine Ifedi, despite what critics had to say about his performance. So it's something that I hadn't quite considered before. What did you make then of the play, the times that you saw him? Because did he often play at right tackle? I know he filled in for Brown during the season with Jones in at left guard, but I don't remember seeing a ton of playing time of him at right tackle.
He doesn't have a ton of film at right tackle. I know he's played games there at different spots in time, and he's been okay, but I would love to see a full offseason of him preparing to be a right tackle, and I think that he could get that done. It's not as easy as people make it seem playing left and right. That's why I've been so impressed with Fant, because he's played really three positions at once and had to prepare to go into a game at all three positions. So now you give him a specific role, a specific focus, and I think George Fant is a hard enough worker. He's a great individual, and I think that he could get it done if you gave him that challenge to be your starting right tackle, at least for this year, so that you could see if he could really get it done.
But you still see them drafting a right tackle?
I would prefer. If you're asking what my preference is, I would love to see them draft a right tackle early and get a guy, because I think that there are, in terms of the draft, there are a lot of good tackles out there that would be available to the Seahawks at their current position at the 27th pick and you know, even into the second round.
So if we're going for win now in 2020, like we're going to win the Super Bowl in 2020, I feel like you have to keep Ifedi at right tackle.
He's too.
But it's about how much you'd have to pay him.
I know that. I feel like you might have to pay him.
I really would advise against going out and paying him.
Here's what I might do. I don't think that there's going to be another team that's going to overpay for him. I might let the market just take shape, see how far it drops. I don't think Jermaine Effetti's reputation is so great around the league where other teams are just going to jump on
him. He is an incredibly durable player, though. He's improved every year, and last year he was the only player outside of Russell Wilson to appear in every offensive snap. So he has durability, and when you're an offensive lineman, that really, really matters.
It does matter, and when you look at Humphreys, the guy who just got a big deal from the Arizona Cardinals, he had one good year. All the other 3 years in his rookie deal, he was injured and major injuries. And because he had one good year, they signed him back. Last year to a very lucrative deal. Jermaine Effetti is going to command more money than people might realize or anticipate because of that durability, because he is a good run blocker, first off. And two, he just, you know, has continued to steadily get better. It's not at the rate where you go, man, this guy is going to turn into a Pro Bowler someday. But in terms of a free agent market that's starved for right tackles, yeah, Jermaine Effetti's going to command some serious...
How many positions do they really have to spend big money on, though?
Seattle?
Pass rush and what... Okay, so we'll say Clowney.
So defensive end. Well, I would say two pass rushers.
Two pass rushers and what?
If you want to get someone like a corner, which wouldn't necessarily be costly, but if you traded, you could potentially be giving up a pick in this year's draft, depending on when you trade.
I don't know that I want to spend big money on a corner, though.
Outside of that would be offensive line.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I would.
If we're getting into this realm of spending money on a right tackle, I don't want to spend it on Jermaine Effetti.
You want to spend it on somebody else.
Give me Jack Conklin.
Okay.
Give me Jack Conklin, and if you want to go all in on that, then let's spend some serious money in a long-term situation where you now have a right tackle of your future that you can feel really good about. But with Jermaine Effetti, there's always going to be question marks, and you're gonna feel like you've definitely overpaid for a guy just because you were out of desperation. I think it would be a smarter move to go and lean on a George Fant or get a really good, strong candidate in the draft, because there are some really good candidates in a pretty deep tackle draft this year. I think that would really serve the Seahawks favorably.
And I also think it's fair to question the Seahawks' own interest in re-signing him, considering that they didn't use his fifth-year option. They declined that in May. And I don't think that they don't believe in him. I mean, they believed in him enough to draft him 31st overall back in 2016, and they've consistently defended him and have talked about his improvements over the years. But I think declining that fifth-year option and knowing that he would hit free agency after this season was telling.
Very telling.
I think that if they wanted to keep him, though, I think they've got the money to do it. Two pass rushers in a position on the offensive line, they could do it. I mean, think about it. If you move on from your right tackle, that's one more project that you've now taken on. Whether you're drafting somebody and bringing in a young player, or you're putting Fant there and then moving him around three different positions. That just sounds like a shaky situation to get into. Now, if you'd rather pay somebody else that's out there, fine. But, yeah. I mean, Jermaine Effetti, to me, is good enough to make this offensive line work. He's not the problem.
He's good enough, but I think that George Fant, given a year of focusing on at a right tackle position, I think that he could be good enough to get it done and be a significantly cheaper option for you that actually works. So
Straight up as a right tackle.
You're not having him play backup left tackle. You're not having him play the tight end role. You don't need him to play that role anymore. You've got Will Dissly. You've got Greg Olsen.
Okay, I misunderstood what you were saying.
I
thought you meant keep him, play him some at right tackle, and move him around.
No, I'm saying that that's what he was doing before. So think about that. He never got an opportunity to be a specialist at one position. He had three positions that he had to really focus on and try and be a good at all of them. So he was a Swiss Army knife. I think he has the ability, if he could just focus on one position and focus on right tackle, I think he could be a pretty good one for you.
As long as he doesn't listen to country music.
That's right. According to Trevor Moad, don't listen to the negativity.
But if he does, I mean, he went to Texas A&M.
Jermaine Effetti did, yeah.
I'm talking about Fant.
George Fant went to Western Kentucky, so not much better. Yeah. So, yeah, he's going
to
be...
No kidding. How can you go to college in either of those two places?
Well, here's the thing.
And not listen to country music.
I didn't really listen to country music. I went to KU, and yeah, I walked away like in country music.
Of course.
Like you're just surrounded by it.
Western Kentucky. What are they, the Hilltoppers?
You better believe it.
Yes,
yes sir.
Their mascot's that, like, that red blob. That's always
he looks
in
like the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah, he's always in the Sports Center commercials.
I hung out with him one time down at the Rose Garden, NCAA tournament regional, I believe. Western Kentucky versus Gonzaga. Yeah, and the big Hilltopper blob was running around. That's great.
Wait, what is he? Lee. I'm looking at him right now. He is
he's a Hilltopper. Yeah, exactly. You can't say anything. You can't come back.
There's a photo of him eating a sign on the field. I'm confused. Let's get to NFL headlines.
Stop Tom in his tracks.
Boom.
Tom, I want you to see this photo.
That was great. All right, maybe later.
Yeah.
Okay. We didn't really get to this part of the Joe Burrow story. We talked a bunch about him kind of being, what's the word, clandestine, a little shadowy about what his intentions are, whether he wants to be coy. Well, he says he has leverage over the Bengals. So what exactly does he mean by that? He's willing to not play if they pick him number one?
Part of me wonders if he's just a guy that doesn't like being told that he has to do something. You know, people are like, well, you're pretty much slated to be the first overall pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's like, No, I'm not.
No.
If I want to, I've got leverage. I don't have to do anything. You know, he might just be one of those guys that's just defiant. But in all seriousness, I do think that Joe Burrow is leaving a lot of clues for all of us to make the obvious conclusion that he doesn't want to be there in Cincinnati.
You think he's leaving breadcrumbs for the media
to
play this whole thing out?
Yeah, they're shadow games. Yeah, absolutely.
Shadow games. I wouldn't want to go to Cincinnati.
Wouldn't want to? Well, it's a hot mess of an organization right now.
Well, their biggest issue over the years is that they've been cheap, which is the reason why Marvin Lewis had a job there for so long.
Well, and it's
because
kind of
he was able to make the playoffs, not win any games.
Yeah.
And that worked perfectly. It's like, hey, Marvin, we like you, but you don't win any playoff games, so we're not going to pay you that much money. Well, perfect.
And that's kind of what Carson Palmer was implying, too, that they just don't want to win Super Bowls. That's not what they're focused on. And who knows if that's true. There are players there that want to win a Super
Bowl. They've had talent there over the years. That 2005 team, the team that had Carson Palmer where he got hurt, they shredded his knee against the Steelers. It basically, I won't say he was never the same after that, but the Bengals were not the same after that.
No.
They could have been great then. That might have changed everything for them. But, yeah, they're a cheap organization. I could see why Joe Burrow, if it's not him that doesn't want to go there, he's probably been advised against going there.
I would say so. And I would say this, that I think Joe Burrow is a good quarterback. I don't know if he is a game-changing franchise type of quarterback. And the reason why I say that is you've got to be a generational type of talent to be able to make that situation work and get everybody better around you with an organization that is cheap, that isn't necessarily all in on making the right moves all the time and you can't really trust. Carson Palmer was a generational type of talent that was able to, you know, make some things happen there. I don't know if Joe Burrow is that kind of guy, where he would probably find the most success being in an organization that, although they might be bad or they might have had a downturn, they are an organization that traditionally finds themselves
Carolina
heading to the playoffs. Yeah, Carolina would be a great fit and ultimately would make the most sense for him to want to go there because his offensive coordinator they just had a ton of success with in Joe Brady is now the OC for Carolina. So I think there's a lot of, you know, like I said, shadow games to try and see if he can work his way into Carolina.
You got
to
go out and spread rumors about yourself till you drop all the way to Carolina.
Are those lyrics?
No. Oh. That's just my thought.
It sounds like lyrics.
Steep.
No. It's a famous country music song.
You can't
called Rumors.
To that. Don't listen, Russell. All right, we'll get back to some of this in a second. Right now, what is on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
The Cougs hosting Cal, 7 p.m. on these very airwaves, 710 ESPN Seattle. God, I just forgot who the Cougs coach was again.
We just went over this.
Something Smith?
I share a name with him.
Is it Nick Smith?
It's either his first name's Kyle or his last name's Brown. That's all I'm giving you.
It's Kyle Smith.
Boom! Yeah, right,
Kyle Smith.
Tom, I was waiting for you to go, yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
What's your name again?
Yeah.
What's your name?
And who are you?
Wait, what are you doing?
What?
Okay, I'm
pretty sure it starts with a K. I don't know.
I'm not confident about that.
They're hosting Cal, who has Mark
Fox.
I was thinking
formerly of Nevada, formerly of Georgia.
Right. I was going to say Jeff Tedford.
Yeah, he's not around anymore. They got Justin Wilcox roaming their sidelines.
Right. And right after this game, this is the more important one, really, right? Dragons insider immediately following the Coug game with Lydia Cruz, so you get caught up on all your Dragons information. Do they have any significant injuries? Anybody know about that?
Well, Cason Williams didn't practice again today, so he remained sidelined.
And he was the big name of that entire camp that you're
I'm
watching.
I'm so frustrated about
that. What's
going
on there, Jake? You got any insight?
Jake,
come on, Jake.
Yeah, come on, Jake.
Jake!
Why is he playing, Jake?
Why, well, Jake?
My guy, Cason, I think this has been a really frustrating muscular issue for him and not being able to get out there, you know, just with a nagging injury that is uncontrollable at times, that, you know, a lot of it needs rest instead of, you know, continue workload, and that can be really difficult to get yourself back out there. So for Cason, I feel for him because this league was perfect for him. This is a great opportunity for him to show what he can do, and I think that this offense for the Seattle Dragons definitely needs him at that X receiver position. They've got really good players in Prohl and Keenan Reynolds, but to have that true X receiver that can go up and get the football like Cason can, that would really help them out in terms of their downfield attack. So I'm hoping that he can get out there as soon as possible.
And that one's hosted by Lydia Cruz. I wouldn't be shocked at all. She's had some good interviews on there. I wouldn't be shocked at all if that topic comes up, that exact topic, about what to do about Cason Williams and what his timeline looks like.
Are we going to get to a point?
Jake.
Can we get him in here?
Cason?
Yeah. That's up to Jake.
Yeah, I'm sure we can get Cason in
here. I don't want to put too much pressure on you.
There's no pressure.
Jake, can we get Gino Simone in here? What's going on?
Yeah, we'll bring the Skyline crew back.
Come on.
Let's go, man.
All right, coming up next, what's going to be more difficult for Greg Olsen? Catching passes or blocking? That's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Do you guys remember that game back in 2015 when Carolina came up here?
And a playoff game?
No, it wasn't a playoff game. Carolina came back on Seattle to score a touchdown with maybe 30 seconds left in the game.
Was it a break in coverage and it was Greg Olsen?
Yes. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
I think it was the one where Sherman and Earl were kind of pointing fingers at one another.
Yeah, there was not a press conference. After, there were quotes in the locker room afterward where we never found out exactly what happened, but there was a misunderstanding specifically in the kind of coverage that they were playing.
And yeah, it was a 26.
It was on one of those guys.
Right, it was a 26-yarder for Olsen. It looked like he ran straight through it. Like there were, somebody obviously should have been there. You know what Olsen's numbers in that game were?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
125 yards.
Jake?
I've got no guess. Around 100 yards?
131.
Ah.
Woo.
7 catches for 131 yards. He was not the leading pass catcher in that game, though. That would be one Jimmy Graham, 8 for 140.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know who was the second leading catcher for Carolina that day? Another tight end. Ed Dixon.
Oh!
He was only 3 for 24. You know, this was back in the days where that secondary was notoriously having problems covering tight ends. Mm-hmm. Who was the guy in Cincinnati? Tyler Eifert?
Yeah.
He was one of them. Cincinnati came back on him. Olsen had a big day. Maybe there were one or two others. Maybe Kelsey might have had a big day that game in Kansas City. But yeah, Ed Dixon, how about that?
That's interesting. It's funny when you look back.
And as I said before, Olsen, the first tight end to have 1,000 yards receiving 3 years in a row, that was one of them there. It was because he played against the Seahawks, see?
Of course. Yeah, there we go.
They were 15-1 team that year. They went to the Super Bowl. What do you want? So speaking of Olsen, when he gets here, what's more important for him, catching passes or blocking?
I would say catching passes. That's the reason why you're bringing this guy here. You're not bringing him to be, you know, just a solid run blocker like you were with Ed Dixon. When you brought Ed Dixon and you signed Ed Dixon from Carolina, oddly enough, we signed two Carolina guys, you brought him in to be more of a blocking tight end and not really a dynamic pass catcher. You're bringing in Greg Olsen because you feel really good about the signing in the sense that he can do both. Like, this is the unique situation, is you're not – Greg Olsen, I would say, if you're going to ask me what he does better, I think he is a better pass catcher just because he is in that elite category. That for a long time in his career, that he has been an elite tight end catching the football, and when he's out there on the field, he produces. And, you know, but he is a very good run blocker as well. He's not the best run blocker in football. I think Will Dissly is amongst one of the best, but he is a very good run blocker that's not going to be a liability for you. And so that's what makes this really exciting.
I'm starting to imagine your scenario there where we're talking about George Fant being at right tackle.
Yes.
So you've got, so that's your offensive line. And then if you've got Greg Olsen lining up right next to him, I'm trying to think of how that run game goes. If he's not a good blocker at this point in his career, like if you know if he loses strength or something,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I want two guys where there's some questions standing right next to one another there.
Right.
Maybe even three if you talk about the right guard. I'm not sure who that's going to be.
It would presumably be Fluker. It would be interesting from that standpoint. But I think with Greg Olsen and Will Dissly, it's not a matter of whether they're good players or not. That's the thing, is you're not questioning whether they're good players.
No, it's just the shape they're in.
Well, not even the shape. I wouldn't even say the shape. It's just whether can they stay on the field, right? That's the big thing. When they are on the field, Will Dissly and Greg Olsen, you know that you're going to get a very, very good, productive player out of them. And so that's what you're hoping for in that scenario. And that's what's exciting to me, is you can be dynamic in the running game. You're not going to lose anything. You don't need to sign a guy like Luke Wilson and not really have that dynamic pass catcher and give something up. You got great run blocking. You've got great pass catchers. It allows your play action game to be very significant, and you can still stretch the field. And I think that that's all very encouraging.
Don't you guys also feel like maybe Russell Wilson has more power with this team than he did a couple years ago? I know that sounds obvious because of the contract extension, because he's getting older, because he's now one of the veteran most players who, along with Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, are really kind of the lingering guys from that original Super Bowl winning squad. But it feels like Russell Wilson has more power to intentionally incorporate Greg Olsen into an offense in a way that he might not have with Jimmy Graham back in 2015.
That's a great point. I think that, you know, in terms of Russell, I think he just has more command of the offense, so to speak, and like you said, more influence on the offense. So when you've got a guy like Will Dissly, who you gained great favor with, he was starting to get a lot of receptions and touchdowns, and it took some time, but Jacob Hollister became that guy eventually for him, that, you know, the third receiving threat that he felt comfortable with, and started feeding him the ball and even fed him the ball in critical situations. Overtime victory, a inch short of beating the 49ers for the NFC West title. So, you know, I don't think that you're going to have a situation where you're wondering how are the Seahawks going to incorporate Greg Olsen, or does he dictate the offense in the sense where Russell has to force him the ball? If the only reason why Russell Wilson's going to force anybody the ball is because they can produce. And I think that that's the exciting point. He doesn't feel, or he doesn't have lacking the confidence to say, I need to keep this guy happy.
Who's the guy that he has tried to go to, but for whatever reason, it just didn't work out, and he started not to? Like, who, the guy?
Maybe like
Jerron Brown?
A Jerron Brown, maybe. See, I guess the best examples I can think of would be guys where it did work out. Like, his incorporation of Jacob Hollister, yes, obviously that was Schottenheimer. Obviously it was Carroll. Obviously tight ends are important, and they were really down on tight end depth, but it felt very intentional to incorporate Hollister, to incorporate DK Metcalf as early and as often as he did. I guess, yeah, Jerron Brown might have been someone.
I think a better one would be David Moore. David Moore.
He abandoned David Moore?
I think in 2018,
yeah,
he was throwing a lot of balls to David Moore, and then over time, you know, with his route running becoming so spotty that you lose trust. If you can't count on a receiver to be at the same place every time to, you know, be a reliable pass catcher, then yeah, you're going to lose a little bit of trust. And if you remember at the end of the 2018 season, that actually Russell threw a pick. It was a pick where David Moore is running a slant and he broke open, and then he took his foot off the gas and didn't run as hard, and the DB cut in front of him and picked the ball off for a pick six. Mm. And that was one of the most upset moments I've ever seen with Russell. He was extremely upset after that play. And I think from that point, it really took a lot for David Moore to try and get back in favor with Russell.
And he hasn't really done it yet.
He hasn't done it on a consistent basis. 2019, his production, two touchdowns compared to five from the year before, and that's what happens. And this isn't just for Russell. This is for any top-level quarterback. If I can't trust you to be in the same spot, sure, you might get a ball here or there, but you're not going to be a focal point where I'm going to try and force you the ball.
By the way, we got to get Hollister a better jersey number. What's he, 48?
Yeah, 48. What's wrong with that?
No.
What's wrong with that is it looks like a guy who's not going to make any plays.
Right.
That's exactly what you want. It's exactly what you want.
Okay.
You want a guy where people are out there and they're like, is that their fullback?
That guy's trash.
Who is that guy? He's like 240. What's he doing?
That's actually not a bad point.
And then you want him to come out and be like, yeah, boom, third overall receiver. That's exactly what you want. It's called misdirection.
That was what Brock always said about Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett wanted to look as ugly as possible. He'd wear like Fisher Price shoulder pads. He'd pull the sleeves up to his neck.
Like
72. That's exactly what I do.
That's right.
Like, you don't need to worry about me. Yes. Don't even block me.
Nope.
I'm just a scrub.
What you do. Michael, you go to QFC, you go to wherever you need to run your errands, and you look just disheveled. No one talks to you.
Michael Bennett wore a DN's number, though, 72.
Yeah.
That's more like a left tackle's number.
No, wait. Yeah. 72?
Ray Roberts? Yeah. Big Ray, 72?
OCU? Yeah.
90s is more of a nice, sleek
edge rusher
90s.
Number. It's both. Jacob Hollister, to me, it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with him. I hope they bring him back.
You mean other than changing his number?
But yeah, other than changing his number, which is a must for Tom.
Just flip it, 84.
I really want to see them utilize him properly. I want to see him play a little fullback. I want to see him become more of a Kyle Juszczyk. In the way that they use him, I think he can be that type of guy, as well as being a very good pass option. I think it would be really fun to see them try and play with that role. See if it ends up coming up.
We sum it up next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're gonna wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
This is a great idea from Boy Howdy. Like one of his best ideas.
He got
ever.
Him.
At Boy Howdy ESPN tweets, I would like to challenge the Astros players to join a panel debate with player representatives from other teams on the impact of sign stealing. Enough talking through the media. Stand face to face and defend your positions for fans to hear. And then he tags the Yankees, the Dodgers, and Trevor Bauer on it. But really, all we've had to this point are guys tweeting things, guys making videos of themselves, guys answering questions in scrums. I would love to hear a panel set up of, say, I don't know, a handful of Astro players, handful of just random players at two rows of tables talking at each other and debating what the merits of sign stealing are and how much they actually affected these games. Because depending on who it is, the first thing they want to do is protect their own interest and their own position. So if you take all those variables out and you have guys just talking one-on-one with one another, I think that could yield some interesting results.
I'm not kidding when I say if that was pay-per-view, I would absolutely pay to watch it.
How much would you pay?
an obscene amount.
$50?
Yeah.
$100?
Wow.
Well, 100's a lot. I mean, I could go buy cool stuff with that.
I'll split
at the mall. We'll split it. We'll go halvesies.
How about Trevor Bauer just put together his little videos that he does of himself talking about the MLB and what is wrong with it? Just put that panel on together. They can set up their own video. They can stream it live for everybody to watch. I do love that idea and that concept, because here's the thing. Once they get to the season and Manfred trying to put a stop to retaliation, I don't care if there is a stop on it. People are going to do it. They're going to try and have their own retribution. And people, I think, own players are going to let the Astros know. I don't think there's going to be any real friendly interactions that are going on.
Are you concerned about that as a fan? I got to tell you, I couldn't care less. Who gets thrown at? Who cares?
I don't care. I don't care about any of it. I think that it's part of baseball. It's their own way of handling things, and I'm totally fine with it. The only thing that you run into a situation of is if every pitcher wants a crack at him, right?
Like, let me at him.
No, you could seriously. You could have like a serious injury that.
I don't think it's just one pitcher, one throw. I it could be, you know, they could control themselves.
I don't think
do
they're going to do that
in that fashion. But I really think that it could get out of hand. Maybe 2-3 throws.
I think guys talk a big game. I think a handful of pitchers will try it. They'll get suspended or fined, and then it'll just sort of die off. It won't be a big deal.
If Bauer doesn't do it, I'll be really disappointed.
Who is he even with right now?
He's with the Reds, I think. Is he with the Reds or the Phillies?
He's with the Reds.
Reds, yeah. So, to me, the reason why I say disappointed is not that I want anybody to throw a pitch at anyone, but he's the loudest guy. Out of everybody, he is the loudest. And if you're going to be the tough guy that's posting on social media and calling everybody out on everything, then, all right, let's see if you can back it up.
Bauer doesn't strike me as a hothead, though.
He's been so impassioned about this, though. He's been one of the loudest voices on this entire thing.
But that could be his way of dealing with it. Rather than taking the mound and throwing the ball at somebody.
It's possible.
That might be as far as he takes it.
It would be interesting to... It's just going to be really interesting to see how that ends up manifesting itself during the season. Because I'm with you. I think a lot of guys are saying what they're saying now, but I think that they're just a bunch of tough guys that don't have to really talk to... As much as Howdy is calling out the Astros, I think a lot of these players are being tough guys and not calling them out face-to-face. So it would be refreshing. It would be kind of fun and cool to see, you know, this exchange go about between players.
It would be even more interesting to have Howdy be the moderator.
I would love it.
That'd be really terrific,
That'd
man.
Be pure anarchy.
Well, I think that could, too, bring a kind of...
Civility?
Well, I was going to say a bit of a cathartic ending to it, as opposed to people feeling like they didn't get an apology from the Astros and they didn't get a sympathy or care or action from the commissioner. I think that people would feel like if I heard people having a conversation about it and there was a sincerity in a face-to-face conversation, even if they didn't agree, that there was some kind of any kind of sincerity and genuine interaction there, I think it would feel better. And it would be a balm for a lot of baseball fans.
It would be a balm?
A
like
balm.
B-A-L-M?
Yeah.
Wow. I like that.
Thank you.
Like it would smooth over things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And help insulate and hydrate.
Do you think that... exfoliate. Do you think that baseball fans... Because I got to say, with as public as this has been and as mad as people are, one thing I'm not worried about going forward is that the game might not be on the level. I think it's going to be. I don't think guys are going to steal signs nearly as like freely as they once did. I think guys are going to be standing on second base questioning themselves like, oh, should I look into the catcher right now? Or does Major League Baseball have a camera on my eyes? Like, you know, they're investigating everybody and what they're looking at. I think baseball is going to be okay.
It'll be interesting, but you still run into the situation of shifts and other things that are going on with baseball.
Other stuff.
You know
I'm just
I mean?
Talking but, about the game being on the level.
Gotcha. Yeah,
yeah
I hear
shifts.
You. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. But it is interesting the way we opened up the show with Greg Olson and all that, but I really am curious, and I'd love to dive deeper into this thought of what do we think about the Seahawks right now? What do we think of the last few years of them missing guys in the draft and having to make that up with which patchwork situations instead of finding guys that you can build around for the future and continuing to, as you get into free agency, instead of trying to make these one-year splash signings, sign guys that you think are going to be an integral part of your future and that are in the prime of their career? I'd love to explore that a little bit further because I think that there's a lot to that conversation. And right now, the Seahawks have tried to do a lot of patchwork over the last couple of years.
We also have the number 2 Seahawks free agent right before we get to number 1.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The second most important. I already know who it is.
Free agent.
Second most important free agent?
Yep. Jaron Reed.
Oh. Okay.
Profile on him tomorrow.
Stacey, you like bombs?
I do.
Well, I didn't know the bomb was going to work. Do you know what a bomb is? You ever seen a bomb? Didn't you read the instructions? Well, no one can tell what a bomb's going to do. They're unpredictable. But I'm sorry, Jack. Pull over here, driver. This is it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow. 7:10 ESPN Seattle.